All right, folks, I got a very special guest today, a very, very special guest. The widow to one of my idols growing up, a guy I looked up to, Tommy Morrison. Trisha Morrison is his widow, joining me right now, and she's here to set the record straight. Now, this is very relevant for what's happening today. The reason I say it's very relevant for what's happening today, it has to do with the medical industry, and pretty much every, in my mind, everything that happened in 2020, all the shenanigans that happened, people don't know who to trust, where to turn. And this, Trisha and Tommy experienced this firsthand in the boxing world. We're going to be talking about Tommy Morrison, one of the biggest power punchers in boxing back in the day, and just an incredible athlete, incredible fighter. The Great White Hope was what he was called, and the boxing world feared him. He was going to take a lot of the what I believe a lot of the I don't know aura away from other big fighters, and he was on his way to just really take over the division. And then something very, very sad happened to him. He got diagnosed with HIV and AIDS. Trisha, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Nino. Nice to be with you finally.
Yeah, we've been trying to do this interview for quite a while now, and we never could get it, you know, organized. But now here we are. Yeah. And I'm going to start this first by just showing a tribute to Tommy, because I feel he at least deserves that. There's a lot of dark stuff we could be talking about him, but I want to show first the people of who Tommy was, and if they just, you know, jog their memory, take him down memory lane on this incredible athlete, this incredible fighter. Tommy the Duke Morrison. And he got his breaking out was really in Rocky V. But folks, I might have to pause the video just a little bit as we go, because I don't want a copyright strike. So I'm going to start here with Tommy Morrison's tribute, Knockouts.
You know me from Rocky V. In real life, I'm Tommy the Duke Morrison, a heavyweight with 24 knockouts, and I'm going to the top.
We can hear that leather popping.
See what I mean? This kid can bang.
You know, this guy was such a phenom, Trisha, such a phenom in the boxing world. I used to love to watch this guy fight. Anytime his fights came on, the whole family gathered around the television set and watched Tommy Morrison. He was exciting to me, every bit exciting as Mike Tyson.
We're not indestructible, baby, better get that straight. I think it's unbelievable how you give him to the hands of fate.
He was definitely a ladies' man, huh? I love that. I love that about him.
I'm fighting for some feelings never die.
You know, I got to say, Tommy Morrison and myself, I'm going to put myself in there. We both had electrifying left hooks. Both of us did. I loved Tommy's looping left hook.
Giving in can't be wrong. I don't want to pacify. I don't want to drag you down. But I'm feeling like a prisoner. Like a stranger in a no-name town. I see all the angry faces. Afraid that could be you and me. Talking about what might have been. I'm thinking about what it used to be.
you get a nostalgic watching this, Trisha? When you watch this, does it bring back some feelings for you?
You know, it does, because Tommy's life mattered, right? And I think that's what's so important about what I'm doing and what you're doing, Nino, is just making sure that people really get to know the truth and what Tommy was all about. Yeah.
Baby, baby, we can share this skin. We can know how we feel inside. Instead of going down an endless road, not knowing if we did or lied.
That's what changed everything right there, right, Trisha? That fight, that brutal combination that was landed on him changed many things for Tommy, correct?
Yeah, it did, but he did bounce back from it. But yeah, it was actually one of the most brutal knockouts in the history of boxing, and that was the fight against Raymond Mercer. Merciless Mercer.
Something's all worth fighting for. Some feelings never die. I'm not asking for another chance. I just want to know why. There's no easy way out.
That right there is one of my favorite knockouts, most favorite knockouts from Tommy Morrison right there. Just pause it there, man. Tommy Morrison, January 2nd, 1969, September 1st, 2013. Wow. Wow. Man. All right, Trisha, let's get into this. This is that chokes me up.
Well, Nino, while you're getting choked up, right? I just wanted to show you Tommy's WBO belt, because it's 31 years. Right yesterday that he beat George Foreman. So
wow.
Just wanted to show you that. And then also that left hook, which is a lot better than yours.
I don't know about that.
I know you have a lot of fans that are watching you and they love you.
My
Nino.
Left hook was the best. I'm sorry, but go ahead.
Yeah, I really don't think so. But this oh, nice. This is the Razor Ruddock belt, right?
Oh, nice.
That he won. In fact, there's probably another podcast I could do with you about all Tommy's belts, what happened to them, who stole them, how we bought them back, who still has the real ones. And then here you've got the ring belt for Rocky V, right? But yeah, watching that, you know, I actually sent through to you for our interview something about you as a fighter, right? And you are on the list, the top 40 rankings with the highest knockout percentage, Nino. And a lot of your fans that listen to your podcast every day probably don't realize what a strong person you are, too. You 90% knockout, right? You're number two. After you, there's Rocky Marciano, right? There's Vitali Klitschko, there's Frank Bruno, George Foreman. Then there's Tommy with 81%. Underneath Tommy is Mike Tyson, Ernie Shavers, Lennox Lewis, Sonny Liston, and the list goes on underneath you. So, you know, it does take somebody very strong in the ring to be able to do what you're doing, and also for Tommy to be able to do what he was trying to do over the years where he was not diagnosed with HIV, he was misdiagnosed with HIV. One other statistic for you, David, is that the fastest professional heavyweight boxing knockout artists, you are fourth on the list.
Damn.
Right? First is Jimmy Thunder, who knocked somebody out in 13 seconds.
God rest his soul, too.
Yeah. And Jeremy Williams, who knocked somebody out in 14 seconds. Then Tommy knocked out somebody in 1989 with 18.80 seconds. And then you're fourth on the list with 19 seconds in 2002. And in fact, this is how I got to meet you, is because there was so much bad stuff about Tommy out on the internet after he died. It was all bad. It was, you know, let's forget his whole career. Let's forget who he really was. And let's just push the narrative of he got diagnosed with HIV in Vegas. He died of AIDS in 2013. No, that narrative has now been blown away. I hold with me, because I am Tommy's widow, I hold Tommy's death certificate, which obviously everybody can get a hold of, right? Okay. And on there, it does show his cause of death, which is cardiac arrest, and it's multi-organ failure, septic shock, and septicemia. There is no complications from AIDS. And I know you don't have to put that on a death certificate, but I specifically said to the people that did this death certificate, if Tommy had HIV or AIDS, I want it specifically on there. And they did not put it on.
So let me ask you this. A lot of people that watched Tommy in his last years, right, including myself watching him, he was deteriorating. It looked to me. Was that drugs, alcohol? What was that? I mean, I understand being a fighter. And the way I can relate to Tommy is this. It is a death of identity when you retire, when boxing's over. You can never go back to what you used to be. It's brutal. It is a death. It is a death of your soul. To reinvent yourself and try to do something else like I've done is unheard of. A lot of fighters go into alcohol, addiction, drugs. It happens. And I see it with a lot of other fighters. What happened to Tommy? Why did he start to deteriorate? Why did he go down this road of looking kind of malnutrition, sick? What was that, Tricia?
Drugs. It was drugs.
What was he taking?
He was, I met Tommy in 2009. And when I met him, you're absolutely right. You know, when you get kicked out of the sport that you love and was his whole life,
Thing is, you can't go back. You're fighting aging. He's getting old. You know, my biggest, the peak of my career was 28 to 31, 32 years old. After that, a fighter starts aging. I don't care who you are. You know, heavyweights last a little longer, but man, when you're hitting 35, 36, 37, you're aging. You're not the guy you used to be. Was that messing with his head?
Right. Well, just let's look at his record, his boxing record, right? And let's see if it would mess your head, right? At the age of 7, that's when he started to do amateur fighting, right? So he had 290 wins and 21 losses as an amateur, okay? At the age of 13, he retired from being an amateur and he went into tough man contests under various names. And he ended up with a tough man contest career of 50-1. He then retired from tough man contest at the age of 18. And between March and October, he won the Kansas City Golden Gloves. He won the Western Olympic Trials. He won the PAL Championships. He lost a split decision to Ray Mercer. And then at the age of 19, he went and started his professional career where he ended up with 51.
He fought Ray Mercer in the amateurs as well?
He did. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So Ray Mercer kind of knew about his style, understood how he fought. And Ray Mercer beat him before.
Yes, he did.
So Ray Mercer went in there with a lot of confidence. That makes sense. Okay.
Right. So this was Tommy's life. You know, kind of like your life, and then it's cut short, right? And you're told that you have the deadliest virus in the world, HIV, on February 10th, 1996 in Las Vegas. You're immediately flown out of Vegas because the media are swarming. Why are they swarming? You know, were they told Tommy's results before Tommy? Yes. So he was flown out of Vegas back to Tulsa. He was then put in front of the cameras, told again to say that he had definitely tested positive for the virus, right? And then his life spiraled into despair. And I'm going to read you just a quick page so that you can get an understanding of what he went through. And he says, "My life spiraled into despair. Sitting around trying to figure out what am I going to do? I was told I was going to die before I got to my car in 1996. What was I supposed to be doing? I didn't go anywhere. Where was I going to go? Everyone's talking about me. No one wants to be in the same room as me. Don't forget, he's got this huge virus, right?"
Yeah, and that was also when Magic Johnson got it around the same time, right?
Right, a couple of years earlier, yeah. Everyone was terrified of me. So you've got the fear factor, right? No one would offer me a job. I was a liability. My life sucked. Really didn't have anything else to do. The depression and loneliness was overwhelming. I continued to watch my career go past me, lifting weights and keeping myself relatively in shape. But even then, people threatened to cancel their gym memberships if I were allowed to work out in certain gyms. I was often told, leave and go find another gym. People just rolled their eyes at me. It blew me away. It was a weird feeling. Nobody wanted to hear about what I was finding out in my research. I'm talking about my life here, and nobody wants to listen. People kept saying that I was out of my mind, like I had 10 heads, and that God wasn't in the miracle business anymore. And he writes that in 2010. So his life spiraled. He took drugs. He, when you ask what drugs did he take, well, in 2009, I found him shooting up with Adderall, David.
Adderall, shooting up Adderall?
Yeah.
How do you even, I never even heard of that. See, look at this picture here, his before picture. This is probably when he's about in his late 30s right here. And then right here, how old is he right here? He just looks, honestly, I'm going to be honest with you, Trisha, decrepit.
Right. Yep. What, you know what?
That you're saying that's not a result of HIV. That's not a result of AIDS. That's a result of drug use.
That particular photo actually was pulled by the media and was used as an AIDS photo, right? But it wasn't actually AIDS that he had there. What that was a mugshot from jail. He had been thrown into jail in 2011 on a sealed felony fugitive warrant of arrest, right?
Look at the difference here of him here. And I'm not bashing him. I'm just saying, he's a stud here. Total stud. And then, I can't believe what I'm looking at right here. Like, this is just crazy. Right.
But you're looking at a before of a photo when he was 20 years old, right? Yeah. Okay, I've got to show you something here. I don't know if you can see it.
Hold on.
But there's a before and after going to jail. So you've got the before, you've got the after in jail, and then you've got after the surgery, right?
Yeah.
So it's like basically showing a photo of Julian Assange in jail, right?
Yeah.
He went through a lot. And when he came out of jail, he came out with an insect bite to the side of his chest.
In jail, he received an insect bite to his chest.
Yes.
Now let's just hold on for a second here. Now, Tommy, he was going through a lot of, I went through the dark night of the soul where I didn't know what I was doing. I was lost. I was like depressed. Right. It was terrible. I'm sure, obviously, by looking at the photos, and if you're shooting up drugs, especially Adderall, he was going through the same thing. He was going through a very bad dark night of the soul, period. I'm sure you can attest to that, correct?
Yes, absolutely. He writes about it. You know, he doesn't hide the fact that the 10 years after being kicked out were his darkest years. He, you know, went into cocaine, he did meth, he drank, had DUIs. It was the worst time of his life.
I can relate. I had 3 DUIs. I just quit drinking, but yeah, I was Molly, Adderall, GHB. I was taking it all. I was doing it all. Yeah. Painkillers, the whole thing. That's why I relate to Tommy. It's a it is a death of your soul. It is, you don't know where to go next. It's very dark. So by him looking emaciated and sick right there, definitely, absolutely could have been all the troubles and trials and tribulations he was having in his life. It does not mean he had HIV. It means that it could have just been the drugs. It could have been mental wear and tear, wear and tear on his soul. So listen, I'm with you on that, Tricia, because I went through it myself. I just came out on the other end.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Well, when he came out of jail, he came out of jail with an insect bite to the side of his chest, which the media do not tell you about. And, you know, there's a photo of the insect bite to the side of his chest. Right.
So and how long was he in jail for? Was it for a DUI?
No, he was in jail for 30 days and he was arrested under a sealed felony fugitive warrant of arrest. And it wasn't unsealed until after 30 days when he got extradited from Tennessee to Wichita, Kansas. What it ended up being was an $80 unpaid fine from 2006. Yet he went through hell for 30 days. Not only that, Nino, after I bailed him out of this particular case, he got arrested again three times on the way back to Tennessee. One for loitering at Walmart as he was going to the airport. Another one, he was taken off the aircraft that he was on headed to Tennessee, supposedly drugs, but then he got drug tested at the airport. It was clear. And then when he finally arrived in Tennessee that next morning, he got arrested for DUI and I had him tested again and he had no drugs. So it was almost like somebody was just trying to put him back in jail and keep him in jail.
So where does the conspiracy come from all this? Let's go back a little bit to when he first got diagnosed with HIV. What is the conspiracy here that people need to know about that you feel there's a lot of truth to it? Why would he be diagnosed? Why would he be misdiagnosed with HIV? Why would that happen? Was it does it have to do with just not wanting him to fight for the belt? Is it boxing related? Was it people within boxing that were trying to hold him back? What is the conspiracy here?
Yeah, well, first of all, the conspiracy, I don't really go by conspiracies. I like to find facts, right? So
for YouTube's sake, I have to say that.
Right. So because I am the widow, I do have a lot of the information now. And even if you and I had done the interview a couple of years ago, we wouldn't have had a complete story. First of all, the death certificate, right? Clearing him of any HIV AIDS there. Then also an antemortem that was done by a pathologist, Boston, Massachusetts General Hospital. Also clearing Tommy's name and doing a pathology report, which I called an antemortem, in July of 2012, a year before Tommy died. And it says no viral inclusions, fungi, bacterial forms are identified. When Tommy died, this gentleman here, this medical expert, he asked me if I wanted a postmortem done on Tommy, and I said yes. I said, because everybody's going to say he died of AIDS. And I just want to know, did he die of AIDS? Did he have HIV? So he drew the blood. So there's a proper chain of custody. And he sent it to the lab. And this is in Omaha, Nebraska, and a very good facility. And this gentleman here diagnosed Tommy with sepsis from the blood draw. This gentleman here is an infectious disease physician, a very well-renowned one. And then this gentleman here is a very well-known pathologist, and he did Tommy's postmortem. None of these guys are conspiracy theorists, physicians or pathologists. Performed Tommy's postmortem and very detailed postmortem, And HIV in scientific terms is called a retrovirus, right? That is the scientific term. Here on Tommy's postmortem, and anybody can access this, this is court records, says no viral particles were seen, no retroviral budding present, no abnormality, no retroviral inclusions, no viral particles were seen. And it's signed off as per the Code of Federal Regulations and filed in the court of law. And these are the references. If you want your own, go to docket 175, number 28, and it is filed in court on June 8, 2016. So as far as Tommy having HIV, they found no HIV in Tommy. So I then went to Nevada, and I wanted to know, you know, you guys kicked him out of boxing on February 10th, 1996, because you said he had HIV. The world, all the whole world knows that he had HIV. That's what you told him, and that's what the media came out with. So I went to this doctor first. I don't know if you know him, but he is very well known in Vegas. And I said, you better have good medical malpractice, because they found no HIV in Tommy, and they found no AIDS-defining diseases in Tommy. So December 23rd, 2013, who apparently is a really great doctor, great physician, not a conspiracy theorist, he has his counsel in Vegas respond, and it's in court records. It is important for you to understand that Dr. not diagnosed and never has diagnosed Mr. Morrison as HIV positive. Mm-hmm. And this is Counsel Mortensen for Dr. It's docket 283, page 28, lines 14 to 15. It is a court document that you can pull up yourself, right? So where does this conspiracy start, right, David?
Yeah, you know, I want to know why. I want to know, so why would there be any kind of mishandling, misdiagnosis? What would be the reason for this? I mean, it just sounds kind of crazy to me that there would even be any kind of reason to hold Tommy back from what? What's the reason here? Why?
Right. That's right. Well, if you want to look at the sweet science of the side of story of Tommy's story, then you've got to look at Don King. Right. And you know, Don King, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Don King signed a multi-million dollar contract with Tommy, and it was signed in 95. And it was signed just before the Lennox Lewis fight, right? And even if Tommy lost to Lennox Lewis, it would still go ahead. And this is the Don King contract, which I finally was able to get, and it is Exhibit Z in the Court of Law, and it was filed December 30th, 2020. And in here, it shows the contract against Mike Tyson. It's a multi-million dollar contract, and it was for a contract to fight Mike, and then if Mike lost, he would fight Tommy. So it was, you know, a rematch contract. So
he was set after Lennox Lewis, regardless of win or lose, to fight Mike Tyson.
Correct. That's right.
Okay. And so you're what are you telling me here? That Don King was in charge of Mike Tyson back then. So Don King, what? He gave a faulty test to he had Tommy Morrison come up positive so he could get out of the fight with Tyson?
When you watch Tommy's documentary that will be coming out in 2025, you'll see somebody there that actually confirms what you just said, right?
I mean, that's hard for me to believe. Tyson is ferocious. Tyson was Tyson, okay? I mean, that's Mike Tyson. So
But Nino, go back to the timeline, which is really important. 1996, Tyson was just coming out of jail, right? Tommy was definitely in his head, and he told me personally how he would beat Mike Tyson, and I'm not going to tell you how, but he told me he would beat Mike Tyson. He said he he's just coming out of jail, right? I will be able to beat him. And every time he sees Peter McNeely's fight against Mike Tyson, Tommy would look at me and he'd go, that was my fight. I was supposed to have fought Mike Tyson then.
So Tommy was supposed to be the first fight out of jail?
He was supposedly supposed to be the first fight out of jail.
See, and I don't think that would have been good. That would have not have been a good move for Tyson for the first fight out. Maybe 3-4 fights later, absolutely fight Tommy Morrison. But not first fight, no way. So really, that was going to be the first fight with Tommy Morrison.
Right.
What? Yep.
And then Don King then arranges for a fight against Arthur Stormy Weathers for February 10th, 1996. Okay. Now, in the court records, obviously I went to court with this. In the court records, it shows that Tommy's opponent says to Don King, I can't fight. You know, I have a medical script here to say I've got bad sinusitis. I can't fight on February 10th. And this was known by Don King on February 5th. So that's a good few days before the bout on February 10th. And you know that if your opponent bails, they either get you another opponent, right, David? Or they cancel their fight and postpone it, right?
Right, and that's the most dangerous time is when it's depending on who they get you as a replacement, because that's when it gets dangerous. You've been training for a specific style person the whole time, and then they can just replace somebody on you, and that's difficult. Yes, I know that all too well.
Right, but they didn't replace him, okay? Even though in the court records it shows that his opponent was not going to be able to fight on February 10th, Don King never replaced him, right? And so what ended up happening is that the person that was actually not medically cleared to fight in the end was Tommy on February 10th, 1996, right? So...
Okay, so that's when Tommy came up with HIV.
That's when Tommy came up with HIV, right?
Now, to be fair here, from what I've heard and what I've, you know, whispers throughout the community, Tommy was a womanizer. He was with a lot of women. I'm not going to say anything against that. I've had my own thing too, so I'm not judging. Believe me, I'm not judging. Yeah. I'll give him a pat on the back for that. But he was known to be a womanizer, and he was known to have slept with a lot of women. So it made it very believable at the time that he could have come down with something like this. But he was also shooting up drugs, correct?
Not at that time. No.
Not at that time.
When he got kicked out of boxing, that's when it began.
Hold on. He was not shooting up drugs, because I heard through people close to Tommy, I'm not going to say who, that he was shooting up his member down there to get hard for
sex. You saw that. Right, you saw that on ESPN.
No, I did
not.
I talked to people I've talked to people about that privately a long time ago, that he was doing that before it came out on ESPN. Now, that's just what I heard. I don't know. I didn't watch the guy do that. I'm just saying that's what I've heard. So that there's some things there that are kind of muddy.
Right. Okay. Well,
and I'm not judging, Trisha. I'm not judging. I'm just saying what I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whether he did or not, during my lifetime with him, he never did. I never witnessed it. So, you know, who's going to know about that?
Right.
Now,
and you have been with this man. You do not have HIV. You do not have AIDS. Right. So there's that.
Right. Yeah, there's that. So what happens is they kick him out of boxing on February 10th, 1996, and they suspend his license indefinitely worldwide. But in the lawsuit under 0015 on July 11th, 2006, exactly almost 10 years later, they lift the suspension.
Yes. That's right. That's when he fought Frank Castle, correct? Or something like that. Is that when he went to go fight? He had a fight right after that, correct? When they lifted the suspension?
Right. Yep. Yeah, but he never knew that they lifted the suspension. This just came out in court records. It's dated July 11th, 2006. He never knew his suspension had been lifted. And then in court records in 2020, the state defendants, which is Dr. Margaret Goodman and Mark Ratner and the Nevada Commission, the state defendants never alleged Mr. Morrison had HIV in February 1996. And this is a court document filed on August 18th, and it's court docket 326, if anybody wants to pull it up themselves. That is the commission themselves saying that they never diagnosed Tommy with HIV.
So okay, what am I getting here? Am I to understand from what you're saying is Don King had him tested positive for this to pull him out of the Tyson fight, and so that he wouldn't get sued maybe by Morrison by not taking that fight? I mean, is that what we're talking about here? Is that, because that's where it seems like this is going.
You know, it's an interesting concept. That's true. Yeah. But then look again at the timeline. November of 1996, guess what? He's back in the ring again, right? And he's in Japan. He's on the undercard of the George Foreman fight out there. So if you have this deadly, but then by then, the contract with Don King is completely canceled, right? So if he doesn't have HIV, right? And it's all been confirmed in court records. And these court records are filed in federal court in Nevada. They're filed in the Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco. They're filed in the U.S. Supreme Court. I did the rounds twice, right? And they're filed in the court of law saying that nobody diagnosed Tommy with HIV. Then why was he kicked out? Well, one of the court records says, and it's docket 140, and it's page 15, and it says, because Morrison failed to comply with NAC 467.027, section 3, right? And as a result, was not issued a license. Okay, so they're saying that he failed to comply with a Nevada athletic rule. And so I thought, there's no way these defendants could be lying to me. You know, they have filed that and they've written that he failed that rule about 300-400 times in court records under oath. They've also filed, this honorable court should not lose sight of the fact that no one diagnosed Mr. Morrison with HIV on February 10th, 1996. That's court docket 217. Okay, so nobody diagnosed him, but he failed to comply with NAC 467.027, section 3. So what did I do? You know, I went to the legislator in Nevada, and I asked for the rules that were in effect in Vegas, and it's properly stamped. They sent it through to me. And these are filed in the archives. And I got the minutes of the meetings for these rules. And before the commission can actually enforce a rule, they have to get it passed by the legislator, right? So NAC 467.027, section 3C, I found from the legislator, it did not exist on February 10th, 1996.
Wow.
It did not exist. And it didn't exist until Mark Ratner enforced it and proposed it to the legislator in 1997.
Jeez.
So here we have this Tommy story. He's not diagnosed with HIV in Vegas, right? And he has not failed to comply with a law, right? Because it never existed. So the defendants come back to me and they go, oh, this was newly admitted facts now, back to me. They go, granted, the 1996 version of NAC 467.027 only provided that a boxer had to establish that they were physically and mentally fit for competition. And And Tommy was. His physician, Dr. Boy, said, I gave you your examination and you passed, Tommy.
Yeah.
I found you physically fit. So what's the difference between NAC 467.027 and NAC 467.027 section 3, which came out in 97, is the HIV testing, right? Now, when you enforce something under the legislature, you're supposed to have a big meeting and follow the Administrative Procedures Act. You're supposed to produce facts. So, for example, you're enforcing HIV testing, right? Okay, so can somebody test false positive? Well, that never came up because wow. It was never passed by the legislature in 1996. Okay, so can somebody test false positive? Well, we don't know, right? We never had that meeting. Okay, well, what test was it? Did it actually detect the virus or not? Well, we don't know, right? So all these things came up, plus in addition to when Tommy was told he had HIV, guess what, Nino? He was never told by a physician in Vegas. He was told by Tony Holden, who was under contract with Don King for that fight. He was never told by a physician.
He was never told by a physician? That kind of crucial news was not given to him by a physician? Wasn't right. Tony Holden a manager?
No, he never was a manager. And he was a co-promoter. He always co-promoted with Bob Arum. And in this particular case, for this fight, he co-promoted with Don King, right? But he wasn't licensed as a promoter in Vegas.
So I would imagine that Tommy Morrison got more than one test. How many tests did he take? How many HIV tests did he take? How many did he come up positive for versus negative for?
Right. And that's a really good question. So my question was to the courts and to the defendants is, okay, the test in Vegas, let's see the results, right? Because at the time Tommy was told he had HIV, they never showed him the results, right?
Get out of here.
No, that's right. For the very first time, the results actually were shown in the court case that I filed in 2014. And the results actually came on a printed document and came from Quest Diagnostics, right? The lab in Vegas. And on the test result, it showed Tommy was 99 years old, right? It showed a protein, P31, which the FDA had already said.
Wait. It showed that he was 99?
Yeah, 99 years old. Yeah.
How? What do you mean? They screw up his age?
Yeah, they screw up his age.
So
yeah.
Obviously the results would be screwed up too.
Yeah. So not only that, I mean, here it is, and I'd be happy to actually give that to you for you to post, but it is a document that's in the court of law. It's the exhibit QD1, and it's filed by the defendants. And let me give you a few things that's wrong with the test report. First of all, the test was a $23 test. It was never approved by the FDA. All right. It never had any clinical trials to it. They had doctor's name as the person that ordered the test. Yet in court records, he never ordered that test. He never drew Tommy's blood. It has that Tommy's age 99 years old. It has in here that they reported to a Dr. Russell. Well, there is no Dr. Russell in Vegas at that time. I checked with the medical advisory board in Vegas. There's no Dr. Russell. Then it has on here, specimen is stored in a tox freezer. We don't draw blood and then store it in a freezer to test it, right? You test the blood itself without freezing it. Then it had a protein. You know, when you do a Western blot test, you have various proteins that it's supposed to flag, right? And it had listed on this test result P31. Well, you know, in 1993, 3 years earlier, the FDA had taken out that as a criteria. So it shouldn't be on any test, that P31. It shouldn't be on any result. And then there was no signature. It was never signed off by anybody in the lab. And that's against code of federal regulations, right? And then it says on here, false positive tests are rare, but do occur. If this result does not appear to be consistent with the patient's clinical condition, a repeat analysis is recommended on a freshly obtained sample. So to answer your question, right, they never took another sample from Tommy in Vegas, right? They quickly flew him out of Vegas, right, to Tulsa. And then a few days later, you've got Tommy standing on the podium next to Tony Holden again, who's the one that told Tommy he had HIV, right? Who's under contract with Don King. And you've got Tommy reading out a well-scripted, kind of like, please don't look at me as any type of role model. I'm a bad guy type deal. And he says, I've just been told I've definitely tested positive for the virus. All right, so Nina, I'd like to be able to provide you a test result for what he's talking about. There is no test result for what he just said, right? And if you listen to him closely, you'll hear him say, I have just been told I have tested positive for the virus. Have you ever seen?
No, it was just barely hitting him.
It was all verbal. It was all verbal.
So they put him up on the podium, and they just told him, and they sent him out there to make a statement.
Yes, exactly. Jeez. Now, when you mentioned Magic Johnson, right? You look at what he did. He also was sent to the podium. But who was he standing next to? He was standing next to his physician that told him he had HIV, right? Tommy has never been photographed not standing with his physician at all. So, how many tests has he done? Well, like I told you at the beginning of this interview, the Western blot test, just before I filed the lawsuit, was pulled by the CDC because of too many false positives, false negatives. So if you want to show me 100 of those test results of a pooled test as confirmation that somebody has HIV, then I think you need to just check with the CDC. Can I actually really rely on that test anymore? No, you can't. Otherwise, why would they have pulled it, right? Did they test him for any false positives? It is known that you can test false positive because if the test doesn't detect the virus itself, then it's detecting antibodies, right? Well, are those antibodies specific to HIV or can they be antibodies to something else, right? Well, when Tommy finally got tested in 2012 by a whole bunch of physicians, they found that he had antibodies to that something else that would trigger a false positive, right? Wow. So, yeah.
There's a lot to unpack here, man. What was Tommy like? What kind of man was he when you were around him? How long did you date him for? How long were you with him for? How long were you married to him for? You were married to him, correct?
Yes.
So how long were you with him for?
Well, what's really interesting, is that in 1996, I was in Vegas, right? I ran a big tour company, and that's when I had heard of the Morrison name because I was bringing in tourists from everywhere, from Canada, from the UK, and I couldn't get hotel rooms because of that fight, right? And then suddenly that fight is canceled, and I'm thinking, just because that Morrison guy, I couldn't bring in all these tourists this week. We lost a lot of revenue. So that's where it all began with me and Tommy Morrison. So I didn't get to finally, and I'd also heard on the streets, well, he got diagnosed with HIV. And I'm thinking, well, serves him right. How can you go fighting if you've got HIV? Then in 2009, I'm in Wichita, Kansas, which is in the middle of nowhere, right? And on the rooming list, and I'm working for a big historic hotel, and on the rooming list is Tommy Morrison. And I'm thinking, gosh, that name sounds familiar. Let me Google him. And I Googled him, and everything that I pull up, you know, is he was a womanizer, he was a drug addict, HIV, you know, bad guy, you know, jail, DUI, everything's bad. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, do I
And which
even
made
really
you
work?
like them. I
Right. Do I even
don't
really
know how
work
that
in
works.
the hotel? And I wondered, okay, do I give him the best room in the hotel or I give him the worst room? So I finally got to meet him in 2009, and I got to know the real Tommy Morrison. He was poor. He classed himself as homeless.
He
He had
didn't
no
have any
money.
money from boxing.
No money, nothing.
They took it
And
all.
they took it all. They took it all. And he had no income because people didn't want to be within 6 feet of him, you know, right?
What about from the Rocky movie? Didn't he make a good payday on the Rocky movie?
The Rocky movie, he was his residual checks were being opened by somebody else and forging his signature and banking into their own account. Because I said exactly the same as you, Nino. I said, first of all, well, did you ever see those test results? No. I said, okay, so you've got no income coming in. No. I said, well, what about the Rocky movie? You know, do you get any, you know, royalties? Well, I used to, but they stopped. And I said, they stopped. Why? I don't know. They stopped coming. So I got him to check with MGM and SAG-AFTRA, and he managed to get a printout of all the checks that had been issued to him that he never received, right? Somebody had been receiving them
Who?
and would, I'm not going to say.
Probably a family member.
I'm not in my head. I'm not going to say, right? And so he put a stop to that. So slowly, you know, like you said, you have your comeback now, right? In 2009, he started to get his comeback. I gave him an ultimatum about drugs. I said, you know, you can either carry on being the way you are, getting arrested, DUIs, or whatever, or you can turn your life around, Tommy. I said, there is a way. I don't do drugs. You know, it might be easier with me that you get off drugs. So he did drug rehab, you know, and he was very successful at that. And that's something that I've been able to now get out to the media that you could be on drugs, but you can also get off drugs as well.
So how did he die? So, but he was using drugs to the where he when he died, correct? I mean, he relapsed, right?
No,
He did not relapse. Okay.
he did not relapse. When he got out of jail, right, he got out of jail with an insect bite to the side of his chest. That insect bite was drained, and then he had surgery in Tennessee. The first thing
Surgery
that the
for what?
for infection to the side of his chest,
So he
where
had so he had to get surgery due to the bite on his chest.
correct.
Okay.
And why don't you know that? Why don't you know that?
Don't
You
I
know,
heard he
no.
got I heard I heard it was an inf see, but this is the way it works. I mean, you hear things, right? I heard it was an infection due to pec implants.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. It was an infection due to a spider
Did
bite.
he have pec implants?
He did. Yeah. And that was well before my time. And he should never have done that because he didn't need that. Right.
Okay,
In
so
fact,
he but he did have pec implants, so that part's true. But
yeah.
the other part that's missing is that he got bit by some kind of insect in jail, which caused an infection where his pecs are and
Yeah.
also where the pec implants are. Okay, right?
Right.
Okay.
So exactly. So they did surgery. The surgeon that we met, the first thing he said to Tommy is, you're in denial. Just the very first thing. He said, you're in denial of HIV AIDS. And Tommy said, no, I'm not in denial. So that was the surgeon that did Tommy's
Why?
surgery.
Why would the doctor say that? Was Tommy saying, I don't have it, I don't have it, I don't have it? And the doctor was saying, yes,
No,
you do.
no. He just came out with it. And we were both like, just amazed that he would come out and say something like that. Don't forget, you know, he went through all these years with people not wanting to touch him, not wanting to breathe the same air as him, not wanting to get 10 feet within him, you know, 6 feet within him, not wanting to do anything with Tommy. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise if a physician came up to him and said, well, you know, I know you got diagnosed with HIV in February of 1996 and you got kicked out of boxing. That's what everybody would come up with, right? That's why this is so important that we've now proven that he never got diagnosed with HIV in 1996. It's almost like he had a history of HIV. Well, when did that history start? It started in 1996 in Vegas. So coming back to the surgery that he had surgery. It should have been an hour surgery, and it was an 8 hour surgery.
8 hour surgery for an insect bite?
Yeah.
Why would you need surgery for an insect bite anyway? What was going on there?
They took out a major and minor pec muscle. They took out also that pec implant on that side.
So they took out the pec. So it was the implants that they were also operating on.
They took it out. They took that one out as they were doing the surgery.
Because it was infected from the insect bite.
Exactly. That's right.
Could the pec? Okay. All right.
The infection had caused from the bite had caused infection in that area. So the physician took out major and minor pec muscle and the pec implant itself.
So right? his boxing career is done right there anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So he sends us home 8 days later, and we had actually parked in a 2 hour parking for the surgery. So 8 days later, we go home and the home health nurse comes and visits us, and she is supposed to change a 4x4 piece of gauze over Tommy's chest. And these are real pictures. And basically, I'm reenacting what happened that day. And this is 2011. And she takes off the gauze, and this is the home health nurse. And I say to her, there's something underneath there. There's just a little piece of thread hanging out. She said, no, this is all I've got on the test requisition is just to replace that gauze. I said, no, there's something in there. So we get a magnifying glass, and then she starts to pull. And out comes out of Tommy's chest surgical gauze that the surgeon
what?
Had left that the surgeon had left in Tommy's chest. And of course, this is a reenactment, everybody, right? But the gauze was this thick, and it was 12 foot of gauze. And as you can see, I've tightly packed it in like a tissue box just to show you. But that's how tightly packed it was in Tommy's chest. 12 foot of surgical gauze coming out of Tommy's chest, covered in blood clots and blood. And it kept coming out, right? It
you was all were pulling
horrific.
It out right there?
The nurse was pulling it out as Tommy was sitting on a stool in the kitchen. She didn't know it was in there. I didn't know it was in there. I just noticed a thread hanging out of his chest. And listen, just use your head. You know, you've had one pec implant pulled out. Why would both sides still be elevated? There has to be something in there, right? Otherwise, it would be flat, right? So she carries on pulling out the gauze, right? 12 foot of gauze. And I don't know how tall you are, but Tommy was 6'2", 3". This was twice his height, right? And this was the downfall of Tommy Morrison, right? That night, and the nurse, the home health nurse, she almost passed out. She was lying on the sofa. And that night, Tommy walked to the bedroom. His right leg gave way. It's almost like he had a stroke. His head went straight through a wall and broke the sheetrock, the plaster of the wall. And he landed on his neck. And that was the beginning of the downfall of Tommy, because we didn't find out until 6 months later that he had paralyzed half his voice box, right? And so it was very difficult for him to eat and talk and get nutrition down his throat, right, into his stomach. So the next 21 months.
So what happened to this doctor that left 12 foot of gauze in his pec?
Yeah.
What happened to that guy? What's going on with that?
All right. So Dr. the Second, and he worked at Knoxville Hospital in Tennessee. As this was being pulled out, I was on the phone to him and I told him, I said, what have you done? You just left all this gauze in my husband's chest. And he said, oh, I'm sorry. So I
wait a minute. What do you mean, oh, I'm sorry? What do you mean, oh, exactly. I'm sorry?
That's what he said. Oh, I'm sorry. And I said, that's
he admitted he did. He admitted on the phone that he did by saying yes, by acknowledging you and saying yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Why aren't you suing this guy?
Yeah. And so, and everybody's asked, well, what did you do with Dr. I filed with the medical advisory board. I filed a complaint. I sent it through to the medical advisory board in Tennessee. They lost the complaint, right? I had to refile the complaint. And then they turned around to me and told me, I'm out of time, statute of limitations.
I've got to tell you, Tricia, that I've got a lot more questions now. Regarding, you know, I've never trusted the medical industry. I don't trust anything, you know, anymore, especially after what happened in 2020. But listening to this now, it makes me sick to my stomach that what this man had to endure. What are you hoping to get out of this? I mean, you kind of now, kind of freed Tommy's name, right? Now it's clear, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, I can show on the screen something that you sent me here, that says, let me see, let me move this over a little bit here. And it says, that plaintiff now recognizes that neither the state of, I guess, what, Nevada, it doesn't show everything here, but defendants nor Quest defendants ever diagnosed Mr. Morrison. So this is, you have they could find this on the internet, correct? The court
correct.
Document?
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all in court records there. Yeah.
So you are here to say that Tommy Morrison never had HIV. It was a huge type of conspiracy against Tommy to get, basically, what are we saying here? That you feel that it was to properly take him out of the Tyson fight and not sue Don King. There was a lot of, am I on the right track here? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you kind of presume?
There,
this is allegedly, we don't know. This is just what you're thinking, correct?
Right. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle. You know, first of all, the test didn't detect the virus. Second, there was no actual law passed by the legislature to detect HIV out of a boxer. Then the tests that he was subsequently given were not tests for the virus either. And so when Tommy did die, that's when we found out that he did not have HIV. And prior to that, he was tested for all the AIDS-defining diseases that the CDC classified as you having AIDS. And that would be PCP, and that would be Kaposi sarcoma, CMV, all these kind of specific diseases that you would get if you had the virus, and they all came back negative. All those AIDS-defining diseases came back negative. So the narrative now that's out there actually now is telling the truth. Tommy got kicked out of boxing, but he didn't have HIV. His license, he was actually, the suspension was actually lifted 10 years later without the world even knowing. And when he died, it was confirmation again.
And then we missed his prime. We missed his prime. So 10 years later, it wouldn't have mattered anyway.
Well, you know what? He was kicked out during his prime. Again, look at the timeline. He was 26, just turned 27 in that February, in January of that February. So you've got him kicked out of boxing for 10 years, right? and then nobody wants to fight you. Nobody wants to fight you. Yeah,
nobody cares because you're washed up at that time. Let me ask you this. Did he really want to continue boxing at 10 years later? Was he?
Absolutely he did. Yes. You know, he'd be in the ring
36,
right now.
37, he still felt he had it in him to fight.
Yes.
But I got to say, Trisha, I mean, when I look at the pictures of him, he looks very skinny, a bit malnutrition. He looks sick. I mean, he did look sick when during the ending of his life. But you're saying that's to drugs. But he's...
That was to drugs. That was 30 days in prison. That was the gauze. You know, there's a lot of pictures after the picture that you saw, right, that nobody has seen. That was particularly shown as an AIDS photo. Yeah.
How did obviously you were very close to him. What was he like? Was he, I would imagine, probably a big teddy bear that nobody ever really got to see, right? I mean, he was probably that type of guy, if I had to imagine. I mean, I can only speak for myself because, I mean, I put on this image or whatever, but really, I'm the first thing from that. Is Tommy kind of like that as well?
Yeah. You know, you and Tommy are very much alike, right? He was a big teddy bear. He would cry. You know, things would affect him. You know, he would get very upset with letting people down. That was one thing that in his letters is, I don't want to let you down. I don't want to let people down. That was his main concern. And every time he got a DUI and he was involved in drugs, you know, he said, I don't want to be like this. You know, I want to change.
What was his childhood like? Did he have a lot of trauma in his childhood?
Very bad. Yes.
Was he abused?
Yeah. When you look at the I Am Tommy Morrison documentary that's coming out, you'll hear quite a bit about the start of his life.
Wow. Trisha, thank you for joining me. This has been a great podcast. I'm going to send this to the YouTube people and see what can be in there, what can be out. But this will be on NinoSquanner.tv and Rumble. And I could probably edit it on YouTube to here and there. But this was fantastic. I really don't know what else to say except that I wish you the best. And is there anything you want to say now that we're closing?
I just, I'm thankful, you know, that you've taken the time to have me on your show. I think it's important that people realize that his life did matter, you know, and it mattered to a lot of people. A lot of people contact me because they want to let me know what a good influence he was on their lives and that they did look up to Tommy, right? They did recognize the fact that he was given a bad deal. And I think it's opened up a lot of eyes that, you know, you can be a womanizer, right? You were, who wasn't, you know, at the age of 19, 20, but, you know, there was more to that.
I don't think it ever goes away. Sorry.
Yeah. But I think, you know, in his journey, you know, they bring out, you know, the conspiracy side of stuff, right? In my journey to prove his innocence, mine was a deathbed promise, you know, and I promised, you know, the moment he died on September 1, 2013 at 11:50 p.m., I promised that I would find out what happened on February 10th, 1996, what happened. And I had no idea that I would find out all this information, right? You know, the rules, the testing. You know, what happened with the contracts? You know, his manager was siphoning money every time he fought. He was acting as a promoter and a manager. It was just like, you know, poor guy. He needed good people around him. One thing he always used to say is, after the fact, was keep your circle small.
I 100% am like that now. Especially after boxing and, you know, I had 30, 40 people around me all the time that I thought were my friends.
Yeah,
they were gone once the career was over. Once I got knocked out shortly after that, I lost all my friends. And then the fact that I'm, you know, I bounced back, I definitely keep my circle very small now. And he was right about that. I can attest for that. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
It makes me very sad to see such a tragic ending, man. I mean, I was, and the reason I relate to him is because I was on the same path, both in my career and in after. I lost everything, and I didn't have anywhere to go or turn. It was dark. It was lonely. It was depressing. You know, I overdosed on drugs. I flatlined. My life almost taken that way. So I was on my way to where he ended up, and that's why it's very dear to me to discuss this with you in front of a big audience, in front of everybody, because I like to pay homage to a fallen warrior, to a guy like Tommy, who was my idol growing up, and I really looked up to him. And the fact that he didn't make it hurts my heart, and to see you as a widow also hurts me. So just know that my prayers are out to you, and Tommy will live on forever.
Yeah, and he does. And a lot of people now getting to know the true story about Tommy, I think, is great, because that's all he wanted. You know, he wanted to exonerate himself. And with the help of another boxer, you, it's actually getting out there. And that's amazing. It's a miracle.
Let's make it happen. All right, folks, share this video far and wide. He deserves it. And so does Trisha. Let their voices be heard. Thank you, Trisha, for joining me. Where can people find you, by the way?
Well, they can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and also on Twitter, X. And it's Trisha Tommy or Tommy and Trisha Morrison. And also, if you're wanting to find out about the upcoming documentary on Tommy, it's called I Am Tommy Morrison. And there's an IG Instagram account called I Am Tommy Morrison. You can go ahead and follow that. And also, Tommy now also has an official YouTube channel, and it's official channel Tommy Morrison.
Right. Trisha, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Nino.